Hello and welcome to this AAT podcast. I'm Amanda Morehouse and this is the second in a series of three podcasts to help lead change in your organisations. This podcast is called Negotiating and Influencing in Business. And you might be sat there wondering, well, why is this significant to me as a finance professional? And the sorts of things I would be thinking about is that in business, as in any aspects of life, no one person can be relied upon to do everything. We need other people to help us, and other people need us to help them. And if we're going to be really successful at having great results, then in many ways we need to influence other people to get ourselves what we really need. And some people are quite reserved about the prospect of negotiating and influencing other people from the aspect of manipulating other people. And the underlying assumption through what I'm going to talk through is on the assumption that your intentions are ethical and with the best intentions in mind. So that's the underlying assumptions. I'm going to be talking through four key stages in this podcast: managing business outcomes, building rapport and trust, practicing listening and questioning skills, and linking up. Those are the four key steps that we're going to go through. So before we start, I'd like to give you something to think about, and I'd like you to think about, who do you consider to be great at managing business relationships and why? What is it that these people do? How do they do it? How do they look? How do they engage other people? And what specifically do they say, and how do they look when they're engaging others to get them to agree to the outcome that they want? And as we're going through these four stages, I want you to keep these people in mind, to try and make sense of and analyse specifically what they're doing. Because I want you to copy specifically what they're doing, because if the technique works for them, it's likely that it's going to work for you. Okay, let's start on step number one, managing business outcomes. Now, my observation of highly successful people in this field of influencing is that they know specifically the outcome they want before they even enter into a conversation. They've already pre-thought out what they want to hear and what they want people to agree to at the end of a meeting and a conversation. And they are very skillful at using questioning and listening techniques to enable that outcome to be realised at the end. Most people in business have not thought about the outcome they want from every conversation, and therefore they are open to be influenced by the people that have. So my first tip, or my first suggestion to you, is to spend time thinking about the specific result that you want and why you want it, and practicing hearing how you articulate why it's important. Because to be able to realise those outcomes, first of all, the first step is knowing what the outcome is. And that's step number one. Now, step number two is building rapport and trust. And as I talk through building rapport, and I'm sure everybody knows that building rapport is critical in negotiating and influencing, I'm going to be putting forward the suggestion that if you are going to be successful in the second step, we have to work on the assumption that the majority of people in the world will think and process information very differently to you. And if we really want to have a high degree of impact in the way that we get through to people, we need to be able to understand how the other person might think. So I'm just going to spend a couple of minutes giving you some theory and some insight into how the human brain works to enable you to maximise the way that you can build rapport and ultimately trust with your business colleagues. The human brain is effectively an information processor, and inside it is almost like a filing system. It's quite limited. We're bombarded by lots of pieces of information every second, and what the human brain chooses to capture and chooses to delete or distort is very much dependent on what the beliefs, the attitudes, and the memories are of that filing system that already pre-exists. So you know, don't you, that if somebody believes and their attitude is such that change is a really great thing and they've got lots of positive memories, what they will choose to capture in the way that they capture information is all the evidence to support the belief that change is fantastically good. Taking the opposite extreme, you probably have worked with people who are very sceptical and cynical and quite critical of an organisation trying to lead change. Maybe something in the past where a result has not been delivered or where they've not been listened to. And therefore, as you're giving them information about a new change, they will choose to filter out all the positive messages and gather evidence to support their belief that change is going to be a bad thing. It's going to be a disaster. So this human brain takes in information, and there's some certain coding systems that enable people to think about certain things. The coding systems are really important if we're really going to increase the impact. Some coding systems are visual, some are auditory by what people hear, some are kinesthetic and tune into the way that we feel about something, our intuition. And some coding systems are what we call digital systems. They process information in a rational and logical and systematic way, and they need digital information. Now, these coding systems are important, and we're going to be talking about them later, because what people choose to think about at any one point of time drives their state of mind. And if we're going to influence and negotiate with people, we need to get them in a positive state of mind. And we're going to be looking at some techniques to get them in a positive state of mind. And the state of mind drives body language. And this is our biggest clue when we're talking to other people, whether they are engaged with what we are suggesting to them. Okay, I'm going to move on. I just want you to bear in mind the messages that majority of people will think differently to us. And therefore, we may need to change the way that we're communicating to others to change their response. Okay, let's go back to rapport. Why do we want it? Well, we want to build rapport so people will be open to our suggestions. People, when they're in a state of rapport, tends to relax, and people talk about, well, I just clicked with that person. They're just on my wavelength. I really hear what they're saying. And what they are verbalising is that they feel in rapport with the other person and that they trust them. Now, this is fundamental. It's going to make our job so much easier if people are in a state of rapport. And there's three things that we can do to engineer this state of rapport, because up until this point, you might have been unconsciously aware of somebody building rapport with you. You're not aware specifically of what they're doing. So the techniques I'm going to give you now are something that you will be aware of and you will be in control of, but the other person will be unaware. And that's good, because we want everything to look and to feel natural. The three ways in which we can build rapport with the other person are shifting their state of mind, secondly, by using specific language patterns, and thirdly, by our body language and how they see us behaving. Number one, state of mind. If you want somebody to be open to your suggestions, then you need to be in a positive state of mind to start off with. If you go into a situation and you are positive, you are energized, you're looking excited and enthusiastic, then of course that's going to rub off. It's going to be infectious. The tip, if you want to get somebody in this similar state of mind, the way to do it is to ask them a question that will enable them to pull up a memory of something very positive. Because I've just told you that what people think about at any one moment in time drives their state of mind. So you might choose to write down these questions. They're very, very powerful. Question number one. What is it about your job, or what is it about this situation that you love about it, that gives you the buzz? What is it that you love about your job at the moment is a question you may use. Second, what are the biggest challenges or the biggest issues that you've had over the last 6 months that you've been really successful at tackling? And questions like this enable the other person to go into their memory bank and pull out positive messages. And this is a technique that you would use at the very beginning of any conversation. So, state of mind. Secondly, language patterns. Language patterns need to reflect the visual, the auditory, the kinesthetic, and the auditory digital coding systems. So, visual language patterns use words like, let's take a look at this problem. It appears to me that we need to address this issue. Let's create a picture. And to complement the visual language patterns, to use pictures and diagrams. You may have seen lots of people on flip charts drawing process diagrams. These are people that need to see a problem, need to see an issue to be able to agree with it. Auditory language patterns. Let's listen to what this problem may sound like. Let's tune in to the problems. I want to question what you're saying. Let's harmonise. Let's really hear what the team want to say about this. And auditory people, it needs to sound right to them. So auditory language, kinesthetic language patterns are about getting to grips with, getting a hold of the solution in a concrete and hard way. And what you will probably see with kinesthetic people is that they use their hands to express themselves, and they're literally moving the problem around and the solution, and you can see things being moved in their hands as they're really getting in touch with the problem. So kinesthetic language. Finally, auditory digital language patterns, rationale, logic. Let's process this problem. Let's decide. Let's consider. Let's sense what we need to measure in a structured and chronological way. It's a different level of language. So this is just really an introduction to make you aware, language patterns to build rapport. Now, if you're in a negotiation with somebody and you hear in this first stage some objections, I don't see what you're saying. I don't see what you're saying is an objection that requires you to give them more visual information or to use more visual language. If somebody says to you, it just doesn't sound right to me, that's an objection because they're not hearing the solution in such a way that is meaningful to them. So we probably need to change AR language in the way that we sound by using our voice. If somebody says, it just doesn't feel right to me, so we're not communicating it in the language which engenders the right sort of emotion or sense for that person. Some people make decisions based on their gut feel. And if people say, it doesn't make sense to me, we probably need to show them a beautiful business case with lots of digital information to give them the pros, the cons, and the risks. It's interesting, isn't it? Okay, the third step, body language. And I know that you know that body language and tone of voice makes up the majority of what we communicate to other people. Birdwhistle, from the studies that he did, said that 55% of what we communicate is down to our body language, and approximately 38% is down to our tone of voice. And if we want to build rapport in this first step, we have to watch and copy the other person's body language in a very discreet way. Why? Because the unconscious mind picks up the signals that you are like them at some level. And people like other people that exhibit some characteristics of themselves. And that's what rapport is all about, building that trust that you are like them, you are on their wavelength, and that they can really trust you. Now, I'm going to give you three or four things to focus on to enable you to use your body language to build rapport. The first is the alignment of the spine, the posture. Watch how it is bent forward and backwards or upright. Whether the person is sat down in a particular way, watch it and copy it. The second are the gestures that somebody uses. So the hand gestures, whether they are extremely still and they put their hands in the laps, or whether they use their hands for expression. And even if you're not used to doing this, if you want better results, then this is very much on your ability to change how you communicate to give the other person what they need. So I encourage you to try it. A third technique is blinking, watching how often somebody blinks and how often they blink and copying that rate of blinking. And fourthly, when we're talking about body language, we can always talk about the voice as well, how it sounds, the speed of the voice and the pitch of the voice. Of course, I don't want lots of men out there talking very high pitched if they're speaking to women that are out there in business, but whatever is comfortable for you. And again, it may feel a little bit strange to start off with, but believe me, practice makes perfect. Step number three, practicing listening and questioning skills. The intention of negotiating is to find out as much as you can about the other person. The more intelligence that we have on the other person's perspective of the world, the higher the probability we are going to get the outcome that we want. And it's the outcome that is really the most important thing. When we talk about listening skills, I watch and observe many people in business, and there's some barriers to effective listening. And I'm just going to talk about some of the barriers. I find people mind reading in business. And, you know, it's unfortunate that we can actually think a lot quicker than what we can speak. So rather than actually listening to the content of what is being said, a lot of people are trying to speed up the conversation and end up finishing off what somebody else is saying. It can be quite irritating for the other person. Secondly, a second barrier to listening is sidestepping, where you know that if something is really important to you and you want to discuss it, and the other person, instead of listening, is always bringing the conversation around to what they want to talk about, you do pick up that sense that they are not listening, and you start really getting the feeling that what you're saying is not important to them. That undermines that second step that they've taken in trying to build rapport with you, doesn't it? And the third is what I'm going to call as the Mrs. Bouquet syndrome, where instead of listening, they're trying to upscore you. So if you've been working for a company for a year, they've been there 2 years. If you've been to Florida once, they've been there 10 times. If you've got a house with 4 rooms, they've got 1 with 5. You know who these people are, I'm sure. So listening is not just about hearing. Most people I've come across think they're great listeners because they can remember what the other person said. But most of the energy goes into creating the response, the reply. And what I'd like you to think about in this process of influencing and negotiating is that listening now needs to go up to a higher level. Listening with the intention of seeking understanding about their perspective and what is driving their motivation to come to that conclusion. And if we are really going to seek understanding, then from listening, we need to balance up with some really fantastic questions. And the questions need to be linked to the ultimate outcome that we're trying to get to at the end of this conversation. So listening, how does somebody know when you're really listening? How do you know when somebody's listening to you? Well, they're probably giving you sufficient eye contact. Their body language is engaged in such a way that tells you that they're really interested in what you're saying. And also, when somebody's really listening, they tend to encourage you to find out more about you. So this is where the listening skills come in. One very powerful technique to let the other person know how important they are to you is the technique of paraphrasing. So paraphrasing, where you can hear, you can listen, you can remember, and you can say back to them exactly what they've said to you in their own words. And what the subconscious mind does is register that you are talking their language. You are just like them. You are on their wavelength. You really understand them. So I encourage you to practice this technique of paraphrasing. Now, on the questions are really useful tools. And in this third step, we're trying to gather intelligence about the other person. So we want them to open up. And therefore, the questions have got to be open questions. Any subject in the world, you can keep the other person engaged and talking by simply asking where, what, why, when, how, and who. So you don't need to know anything about the subject matter. It could be brain surgery. It could be looking after guinea pigs. It could be a profit and loss account. So where is this and who is involved and why is it important and when is it significant to do this and who's involved and what are the outcomes that you're looking for? So really good. And it takes the pressure off you as well to keep the conversation flowing. Another example is where you've got somebody else who will not shut up. You may know some people who go on and on and on. And questioning techniques can be used to bring the conversation to a close so you can move on to the next step of talking about the outcome that you would like to have. So closed questions, a technique for closing a conversation is to summarise a couple of options and say to them, I hear what you're saying, I know that X is important, so is it X or is it Y that you would like to choose today? For example, in a meeting, if you're trying to close up a meeting, we're given the perception of choice and we say to our meeting delegates, would you like to finish at 4 o'clock or 4:15? So you're in control, you're closing down that conversation, but you're giving people the perception that they are in control by giving them choice. So close questions with a this or a that option. Step number 4, the most important. Linking up. The intention of negotiating and influencing has always been to get to that outcome that you predefined in the first step. And as you have been engaging in rapport building and questioning and listening, you are trying to get a link between what is important to the other person and your outcome. And this is perhaps the most intellectually difficult part of the process. It's the most challenging because all the time you're having to keep the conversation flowing and think about your responses and we're trying to get a link. And I'm just going to tell you a little story to demonstrate this linking because we are here to sell change, to engage other people in the changes that we want to make. And I just want to talk about my Mini, actually, my car, because the salesman who I met gives me a really good example of the power of linkage and engaging people. Now, I have always wanted a little Mini. Some of you out there might have children, and you know that when you have children, you tend to have the rather large cars to get all the equipment in for the children. I decided I wanted a Mini and I went through my negotiation process with my husband and I won't let you into that process, but he agreed I could have one, a completely impractical car. And when I got down to the garage, I'd already decided I was going to have one. However, the guy who was the salesman came up to me, and his outcome, you can probably guess, is that his outcome is he wants to sell me a Mini. So what he does, he comes up to me, he very quickly introduces himself, and then he starts talking about all the reasons why a Mini is a really good thing to have. He tells me about the speed, the capacity, the engine size, the warranty, the fact that it's 3 years, the fact that the car itself can go to 0 to 60 in so many seconds. And he talks at me for at least 10 minutes. He forgot to rapport build. He forgot that he was supposed to ask me questions to find out why I wanted a Mini. What were the benefits to me of having a Mini in the first place? And what it meant to me about having that car. And if I was going to talk to this salesman again, I would say, stop, slow down, and rather than talk at me, enable me to express what is important to me. And if he did ask me a few questions and said, Amanda, tell me, where do you see yourself driving in a Mini? And who is going to be driving with you? And what is it that's really important to you? And how do you want to drive this Mini? He would have found out that I wanted a Mini because I wanted to be independent. I wanted something that was easy to park. I wanted something with a huge dashboard that would tell me how quick I was driving, because of my driving endorsements on my license. And he would have found out that I still needed enough space to get all my shopping bags in the back. And if he'd found all these things out, he could have really linked how a Mini was going to help me feel independent and enable me to get at least 6 shopping bags in the back. And the fact that I could have parked it really easy in any space, in any city. And the fact that there was no way on earth I would never know how slowly or quickly I was driving, because the speedometer in a Mini is huge, absolutely huge. And he needn't have bothered talking about all the things that he wanted to talk about. So you see that in linking what is important to the individual and to your outcome is the essence of what it is to negotiate and to influence. That is the end of the fourth step, linkage. And I think what I'm going to summarize by saying in these four steps of building rapport, identifying the outcome, questioning and listening, and gathering linkage, and repeating back to them what is important to them in the context of your outcome, is the importance of doing all that and documenting it. So even if it's an email with a couple of bullet points or even scribbled on a piece of paper, to document that you both agree that the outcome is important and significant is another unconscious way of the other person recognizing that they are going to do what you've asked them to do. Some people need to see it written down. Thank you for listening to this AAT podcast in negotiating and influencing business, and hope to see you again on the third module.